I travel a great deal, and last May I was in Berkeley, and I was asked to speak to a Sunday school class. When I was asked, I thought, Sunday school class, confirmation age, maybe high school. When I got to the church, it turned out that there were 20 to 40-year-olds, singles and couples, a group of young lawyers and doctors and architects, all sorts of professions, and they had a name for their Sunday school class, and it was called On Belay, O-N-B-E-L-A-Y. And I said, what is this, On Belay? And they said, haven't you been to the mountains? And I said, well, yeah, I've been to Holden. And well, haven't you been on Belay? And I said, no, I don't know if I have or not. And they said, well, it's when mountain climbers are roped together. They're on Belay. And I thought, what a wonderful metaphor for the Christian life. On Belay. And so there are many, many ideas and many concepts and many stories, many words that we could use that would help us think about our faith and about our world. And so tonight I'd like to have five groups involved in On Belay. We'll start with this group, and the word will be vision. If I just point to you, would you say?
Vision.
Wonderful. We'll take the first four here. If I point to you, would you say, wonder?
Wonder.
Oh, wonderful. And you can be the prodigal son. What was that?
Prodigal son.
And you can be Lazarus. Wonderful, Lazarus. And the rest of you can be evangelism.
Evangelism.
Vision.
Wonder.
Wonder.
We're all on Belay now with those words. We're going to start first by singing a song that talks about vision, and it's Catch the Vision, Share the Glory. Mentioned that Martin Luther could never have written this hymn. He got as far as Italy. He got down to Rome, but he never went any other place. He could never write Globe Encircling Cloud of Witnesses. We have a whole new concept of the church today, and that's part of the vision. Now we'll go to the last stanza. For this time and place we have been born, gifted by the Spirit, trained and sent. And we would hope that part of that would involve
evangelism.
Thank you. Oh, how short our memories. With the eyes of Jesus, seeing. Yeah. With the eyes of Jesus seeing.
Wonder.
Of course. Yeah. Might lead us to a feeling of
wonder.
You know, I've forgotten what you are.
Vision.
Of course. And that's what all these On Belay words, these concepts help us think about. Okay, for this time, at Holden.
For this time and place,
Jesus seeing with the hands of Jesus in.
I'm not exactly certain what the poet meant by captives, but just remember that word because I think you're going to hear not the word exactly, captive, but you're going to hear something that relates to being captive. The last hymn in this trio is Give Me the Sight. Give me the sight to see you where I look. Give me the courage to act on what I see. We're going to talk about vision tonight. Evangelism as vision. What is vision? Yeah. No, you don't have that over there. That's just them. Give me the courage to act on what I see. Grant me the grace to hear my voice clearly. Grant me the grace to hear your voice clearly. To hear what my family asks of me. And then, in, I think, one of the most beautiful ways of describing evangelism, it says, in the way you come down to me, let me go out to where there is no door, to where I, your light, have never gone before. And I think that too many people do not think of the arts in evangelism. And that's what I want you to be thinking about tonight as we proceed. Give me the sight.
On what I see, grant me the grace to hear my voice clearly, grant me the grace to hear your voice clearly, to hear what my family asks.
Most of what I work with is based on a psalm that I have posted in my office. The calligraphy was done at Blue Cloud Abbey in Marvin, South Dakota, by a Benedictine monk. Psalm 8, with a paraphrase by Brandt. Oh God, how full of
vision.
That's the wrong one. Oh God, how full of thank you. Oh, God, how full of wonder and splendor you are. I see the reflections of your beauty and hear the sounds of your majesty wherever I turn. When I gaze into the star-studded skies, I contemplate in utter amazement my Creator's concern for me. And yet, you have made me in your image. You have assigned to me. You have assigned to all of us the fantastic responsibility of carrying on your creative activity. Oh God, how full of
wonder
and splendor you are. And so the church is nourished by that marvelous book of hymns in the Old Testament, the book of Psalms. And we are given an assignment. You have assigned to me the fantastic responsibility of carrying on your creative activity. I started working for the church in 1955 when I was called to be director of the Ministry of Music at Grace Lutheran Church in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. I worked primarily in the field of music. I was the organist, and along with my wife, we had several choirs. I stayed at that church for 21 years. My first year, I organized a committee. The committee was called Art for Faith's Sake. Now, several decades later, someone has written a book about art committees. And because much of what I say this evening has practical implications for you in your congregation, I'm going to pass this book, A Handbook for the Visual Arts in the Church, Expressions of the Faith, around. And hopefully you'll copy the code number and see to it that your church library has a copy. Well, part of the Art for Faith's Sake committee responsibility was to have an art exhibit every year in October. One year we had oil paintings, one year we had woodblock prints, one year we had sculpture. One year we had linoleum block prints by Robert Hodgel, who at that time was at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And he did several iconographic images. Later on in the evening, I'll show you some slides of some of his work. One is showing Jesus healing the blind man. There's another one of Daniel in the lion's den. And then if you look on the side here where the bunny is, we have the prodigal, we have the, where are we?
The prodigal son.
Yes, we have the prodigal son, okay. Now, he's crouched between two Iowa sows here, very beautiful sows, and he has cufflinks. However, in this small reproduction, you see the original is about this big, so we have fairly large. But in this reproduction, you can't see what's on the cufflinks, so I have taken the swivel stick from the Playboy Club and Xerox that, so you see the top of that there. And that is, of course, this hedonistic symbol of a club which no longer exists, so it really dates this artist. But for his time, in the 50s and 60s, the Playboy Club, of course, represented something in our society. And then we do not think that he is carrying water in the little flask here. But it's generally assumed that it's probably a distilled beverage. So, the committee liked this print very much. They bought it, they framed it, and they put it up in the narthex. And all hell broke loose. We had several of our people did not want that particular image greeting the people when they came to church. So, we moved it to a Sunday school room. Well, I stayed in that church for 21 years. The last Sunday, after the third service, I was playing the postlude, and the former president of the congregation came up to the organ console, and he said, "Evenrude, I hear you're moving." And I said, "Yes, we're going to Minneapolis." And he said, "Well, I don't know very much about music, but they tell me you've done a good job." Big accolade of my life. Then he said, "I know less about art, but every time I pass that pig picture, I think but for the grace of God and AA, I'd be there myself." And then I had one of those aha moments that we all too seldom have, and I realized that we weren't decorating the church with art, we were sharing the gospel. 7 years later, in Minneapolis, my director said, "Evenrude, you've been here long enough. You are now entitled to go on sabbatical." And so my wife and I went to the Royal School of Church Music in England and studied. And after that, I still had 3.5 months left. And so I spent that time, instead of studying music, studying art. What has happened in the world of art? Have there been any other artists who have reflected on the biblical story of the prodigal son? Well, it has been an absolutely incredible experience for me. I'm just going to pass a few things around. The first is an article that appeared by Linda Marie Deloff, who writes the arts column. This comes from January 4th, 1989, in the Lutheran, and there are the pigs. And she writes about Evenrude. And then I have a listing of my collection. I started not only did I collect information about sculpture and stained glass windows in churches and books that had been written, but I started collecting art. And I now have a major collection. The first work starts in 1628. So I'll pass that around and get a little idea. Not only do I have prints, but I also have one piece of sculpture. I have 12 plates from 1820. Each plate, 8.5-inch dessert plate, has a image of the prodigal son. Then the earliest work I have is a 17th century work. It includes 11 almost postage, large postage size prints. And I can pass that around. I have a Xerox of that. But I want to read. And the fascinating thing is we go to church to hear our pastors exegete scripture. It's fascinating when we see what artists do in terms of exegesis. And here is what this artist has written in French. And I have an English translation. This is the first print. It says, "The Division of Property." The poem reads, "A father whose great age overwhelms him with pain loads his son with benefits, thus loading him with misfortune." You get the first. You see the prayer that is on on the page here with the prodigal son. Let's pray that prayer together. That's from a liberation theologian. There are several posters around the village that include some of the prayers and texts of Dom Helder Camara. This one has a beautiful insight into the story. Let us pray. I pray incessantly for the conversion of the prodigal son's brother. Ever in my ear rings the dread warning, the one has awoken from his life of sin. When will the other awaken from his virtue? Just below it is the prodigal son, a cast stone sculpture that's in a Lutheran church near the University of Chicago in Hyde Park. And then to the right, if anybody is here from South Dakota, this is an image by Bob Aldrin, who's on the faculty of one of our Lutheran colleges, Augustana College, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And he shows that other son. You can see him in the background there, pointing an accusing finger. The fatted calf has been killed, and the table is spread for the big feast. I have a caricature from England, from the 18th century. And on it, it says, "And he arose and went unto his father and said, Father, I have sinned before thee and am no longer worthy to be called thy son." It's King George III who is the father. And the king covers his face with his hand and he says, "Very naughty boy, very naughty boy indeed. However, I forgive you, but don't do so anymore." Then I looked in the marvelous resources that we have at Holden in the library, and there is a wonderful print of Rembrandt. Rembrandt was very fond of this story. When we get to the slides, we'll see the last painting. One of the last paintings that Rembrandt did is now in the Hermitage Collection in Leningrad. But in 1636, Rembrandt did an etching, and this is of the prodigal son. And I'll just put it out here so afterwards you can take a look at it. And then another treasure that I found at Holden, and I'm looking for, if anybody finds a Jerusalem Bible illustrated by Dali, let me know. I'd like to get a copy. But Salvador Dali, who died, was it just last year or the year before, did a very interesting portrayal of the prodigal son. And so it's in the 16th century, the 17th century, the 18th century, the 19th century. It's just absolutely fantastic, the number of images that that relate to the prodigal son. Now, I have to, in order to introduce the next part as we turn the page, I have to tell you a little bit about my work. Part of my work is to meet with pastors around the country and worship committees. I was asked to go to Oklahoma last September. I had never been in Oklahoma City. I have some friends in Oklahoma City. And so I called them and I said, I'm coming to Oklahoma City. And they said, oh, Jerry, be sure and save at least a half a day because we want to take you to the art museums and to some churches. And so I was with John and Helen Kemp. They had just retired from teaching at the Westminster Choir School in Princeton, New Jersey. And we had a wonderful afternoon. Our last stop was at a Presbyterian church, and they very proudly took me down. It was their church, and we took me down, and the seventh window on the left side, big stained glass window, the prodigal son coming home to the Father. And they had been at our house and had seen the collection, and so they were thrilled that they were able to show me that in Oklahoma City, they had a big stained glass window on the prodigal son. I looked across the nave, and there was another image, another stained glass window. It was Lazarus coming out of the grave. Standing next to Lazarus was a figure holding his nose. I said, he stinketh. Oh, Mrs. Kemp said, I'd never thought about it that way. That evening, I talked to the pastors, and I said, as an ecumenical gesture, and as a way to get your confirmants interested in some biblical stories, take them to this Presbyterian church. They have iconographic images all over in these windows. And then be sure and stop in front of the one on Lazarus, because he's stinketh. Well, 6 weeks later, in my office in Chicago, a package arrived. And that package, part of the image is reflected here. There you see Lazarus bound in shroud, and the figure to the left is much more discreet, not holding, you don't have a copy, do you? Much more discreet. So he has his hand covering very discreetly up over his nostrils. Now, well, he's still wrapped up. He's still wrapped up. Quite, yes.
I have an image of Lazarus that I've always wanted to do that because there's everybody.
It's just too bad we didn't have a film here so we could caught this. Wonderful.
Because your ear is every symbol of joy.
Well, we're going to have several to look at tonight. About a week after I received the icon from Oklahoma City, I had a letter from an artist in Palo Alto. We also are going to talk about Art for Faith's Sake tonight, and that is a project that I've had of collecting prints for the office. And so I wrote to artists all over the country, and one of the artists was Marie Fletcher Olson at Palo Alto, California. She never replied. Well, I finally got this letter. And the letter said, Dear Mr. Evenrude, I'm terribly sorry. I know I'm late. I've missed the deadline. But I want you to see my work anyway. I've been busy taking care of my father. And as part of my thesis, I have done some artwork. And one of the figures that I have done is Waiting Lazarus. And so there is this figure, totally, I mean the face, everything, totally bound. And then she says, I called my thesis Salvation Process, and she starts, I have underlined a few comments that she has from her thesis. The bondage and obsessions of mine own opulent and greed-ridden society also demand liberation. Where chains of death from all forms of abuse and addiction are broken, and new life is possible. A new metaphor for those who are addicted to think of Lazarus. The image of Lazarus came to mind. the unwrapping of layer upon layer of bondages, bandages, death wraps, one-time survival wraps, covering wounds, providing protection. All these wrappings, old patterns, addictions, and defenses would be transformed in the resurrection experience through a lifetime process of gradual recovery and change. Wow. I am discovering through my own renewal, through experiences in the 12-step process of Al-Anon, AA, and so forth, a new experience of community and church in which we participate in our mutual salvation by sharing experiences, by sharing strength, and by sharing hope. I told my director, Jan Womer, who's the director of worship, I said, all of a sudden, you know, I've been collecting prodigal sons for quite a long time, and all of a sudden, I'm getting images of Lazarus. He said, oh, I can give you one more. For 7 years, Jan was at the chapel at Mansfield College at Oxford in England. And so he gave me this image of Lazarus, which is in the chapel, in sculptural form. And then another artist who is represented in our collection sent me the photograph of the 1964 World's Fair, New York World's Fair image of Lazarus that appeared there. And now while we're thinking about New York, after receiving the image of I went to New York. And I was looking for some sculpture that we might have at our office. And I went to the Kennedy Gallery on 57th Street, and I saw Jonathan Greenberg. And I said, Jonathan, do you have any iconographic images in sculpture that relate to Old or New Testament narratives? And he said, oh, we have a marvelous piece by Leonard Baskin. It's about this high. And we went out in the storeroom, and there was this figure of Lazarus bound in shroud. And he looked at me and he said, you look pale. I said, I wasn't expecting to see Lazarus here. And he said, oh, did you want to see a prodigal son? He said, Baskin has done one of those too. But he said, they only did one casting and it's in Switzerland. And he said, but I have a photograph of it. And so we looked at the photograph and here in a book, it says, Baskin wraps the Son and the Father together. He wraps the Son and the Father together. This is not unlike his Lazarus. This is, in a sense, the ultimate homecoming, the resurrection. Well, that was an exegesis I'd never heard in terms of the prodigal son story. And so the artist again is helping us to see our faith. So I think with that information, we can start looking at a few slides. And I think by telling you those stories, the slides might mean a little more. So let's go. I think they're taken care of. Thank you. Let's see, forward. I got it. Can you see that okay? This is a series of five prints by Tissot. He did this in 1881, I think it was. And he divides the story into four parts: the departure, the foreign climes, the return, and the fatted calf. And it's one of the few instances in all art that I know of where the artist provides a frontispiece and spells out the departure, middle-class English home, mother and the other son are in the back, and in the foreground, the father. And then it says in foreign climes, where did the prodigal son go? Well, here he went to the Orient. He certainly did. I have examples of him going to Egypt. And examples of him in other countries, but here he's definitely in the Orient. And then this is the homecoming. This evening we're going to emphasize homecomings because of the Lazarus story. But here you see the Father and the Son, but the artist wanted to get another part of the story in, so what does he have on, what livestock does he have there? There they are. And where's the fatted calf? Go kill the fatted calf. Under the sterling silver serving dish on the table. You will see some other fatted calves, I think, tonight. Yeah, in the Japanese Oriental tradition, many times they portray a story seasonally. I don't have spring along with me, but summer, the prodigal son is again with the prostitutes. Then he takes care of the pigs in the fall. And in the winter, he comes home to dad. Not only do we have Oriental art, but we also have Oriental music. You just feel that wonderful Oriental sweep. So much of the missionary activity tried to transplant American culture to other lands. It's very encouraging when they use indigenous material. Well, that's the story. This artist is from Los Angeles, and in one picture, not five separate ones, but in one picture, in the upper left, the son leaves, goes to the big city, lower left, upper right with the prostitutes, lower right with the pigs, and in the middle, he's received by the father. Excuse me. Yeah, there are all sorts of little minute panels. One is a bistri, one retells the prodigal son story, and these marvelous wheat sheaves are sheaves of wheat. If there's anybody here that's into wheat, why, you'll have a wonderful illustration of the beauty of wheat. And there he is. I've had some wonderful conversations with Leo. We both collect pigs, and I've learned a lot about from him. This is the homecoming. We're going to have a series now of just homecoming pictures of the prodigal son coming back to the father. This is Robert Hodgell, the same artist that did the pigs. They're so close, they're almost one. Claude Debussy won the Prix de Rome for his music, which is recorded on this record jacket. And this is a Doré print of the son returning to the father. In French, it's L'Enfant Prodigue, and in German, Der Verlorene Sohn. I also collect children's books, and here it's not called The Prodigal Son, but The Father Who Forgave. It's interesting, when Atilica did his book, he calls it The Waiting Father. This is a Murillo that's in the Washington, in the National Gallery in Washington. Several artists include Man's Best Friend, the dog. There in the extreme right, you see the fatted calf. And this next one is a close-up. This is the Rembrandt I spoke about that's in the Hermitage in Leningrad. Henry Nouwen, the devotional writer of our time, writes about this and says, It obviously shows a great deal of compassion and love. But have you ever looked, he says, at the hands of the Father? One is masculine and the other feminine. 17th century? This same portrayal is in a window at Attleboro in England, where Benjamin Britten worshipped. When he died, they put in three windows that represent three of his operas: The Prodigal Son on the left, Curlew River in the middle, and The Fiery Furnace on the right. The Fiery Furnace. The artist is John Piper, the great English contemporary artist. And this is a 1636 Rembrandt etching. This is one of the caricatures that I have. And he rose and came unto his father. And this is again the George III. This is in Chicago, Egon Viner. It's also on that printed sheet at a Lutheran church. I hope you're all getting ideas now for your church, that you'll set up some funds for sculpture, and that you'll have an art committee, and that you might maybe get a painting like this. This is from Collegeville, Minnesota, from St. John's University, a Benedictine priest who is also a painter. Those have to be the biggest arms and biggest hands in captivity. If you ever listen on Christmas Eve to from Cambridge, England, the carols, lesson and carol service, when the children in the choir, the boy choir, are looking across the nave, this is the window they see. And this is the youngest depiction of a son coming back to the father that I have in my collection, from this window at Cambridge. I also collect books. This is a book from Germany. This is one of the plates, 8.5-inch dessert plates. There's an artist at one of our colleges, Augustana College, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Carl Grupp, and he has the father working in the circus, and the son comes home on a unicycle, and Jesus Christ is crucified on a trapeze. Well, it makes you think. Just like Watanabe, we have Valparaiso University, a Lutheran school, gave this Japanese artist from Tokyo an honorary doctorate a few years ago. This one was done in 1983. This is a French print from the 18th century. This is an oil painting in the Dallas Museum by Thomas Hart Benton. Thomas Hart Benton, in preparation for this, did an edition of 250 serigraphs, and I have one of those in my collection. The Prodigal Son, this is done in 1939, the Prodigal Son is coming back to his home during the Depression, and the fatted calf is a skeleton. There is no father. It's just the son. French artist, Millet, from the Boston Museum. This is from Ethiopia. This is a 17th century print. I don't know if you can see from where you are, but Father has ermine. He must have been a fairly wealthy dude. This is a record jacket. And this is my latest acquisition. Was done by an artist from Eagan, which is a suburb of Minneapolis. The Prodigal Son, book 15. She's included the fatted calf is being prepared there. Looks like they're barbecuing him on the left and the pig on the right. This is my favorite book illustration, From Out of Darkness to the Waiting Father. And this is Waiting Lazarus, done by our Lutheran artist in Palo Alto, California, who provided us with such meaningful experiences of taking a story from the Bible and giving it relevancy to the problems and addictions of our time.